Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
City Council gets downtown projects update. The Odessa City Council discussed various agenda items during a two-hour work session on Tuesday. Those agendas ranged from updates about downtown projects to litigation to roads to discussion about the Gertrude Bruce Building located at 1020 East Murphy Street. Odessa College President Greg Williams and Odessa College Vice President of Administrative Services Ken Zartner spoke about the Odessa College downtown project, which will be located at 222 East 4th Street, the former Odessa American Building. Zartner said about 75% of the construction documents are finished, and he expects in 4 to 6 weeks to be on to the next steps of the project. Odessa City Manager Michael Marrero said the hotel-motel tax from the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center could reach more than $1.5 million by the end of September. The city agreed to retain 100% of the hotel-motel tax, both the state and local tax, from the operations of the Marriott Hotel for up to 3 years. Marrero said these funds were intended to provide additional funding to discharge for any loss arising from the operations of the hotel and convention center for any particular year within that 3-year period. If, in the event that a loss didn't exist within that particular year, then those funds were to be used by the city for a downtown revitalization project. Marrero said the city is in the final year of that 3-year period with more than $1 million already collected. He said he estimates the third-year number could range anywhere from $550 million to $700 million. Williams said that he has been in talks with Odessa investor Toby Eoff about the hotel-motel tax accrued by the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center to be used for the Odessa College downtown project. In my conversations with Toby, he has supported these funds for the first 2 years to go to Odessa College to become part of this project, Williams said during the meeting. We are excited about that, and we are thankful for that. City of Odessa's Assistant City Manager, Philip Urisha, gave a brief update on the downtown Odessa Master Plan. He explained that Kim Lee Horn, who was selected by the Tax Increment Reinvestment Zone, will give a formal presentation to the City Council. For about the first 30 minutes of the work session, the City Council spoke about the litigation between the City of Odessa and the Odessa American. On Friday, visiting District Court Judge Rodney Satterwhite, Friday dismissed the Odessa American's lawsuit against the City of Odessa. Keith Stretcher, an attorney for the City of Odessa, called the dismissal a win and an absolute victory. One of the longest discussions happened over the Gertrude Bruce Building located at 1020 East Murphy Street. The Black Cultural Council of Odessa wants to take ownership of the building, but would also be open to entering a long lease agreement with the city. The City Council also heard from City Engineer Yervan Himlakan about a seal coat project that would cover 16.5 miles of roads. The lowest bid came from Ronald R. Wagner & Company for $1,770,582.78, which was 11% less than the engineer's estimate of $2 million. Black Community Has Strong Roots by Kim Smith. When Joanna Hadjikostandi first arrived in Odessa in the mid-90s, one of the first things she did was read H.G. Bissinger's book, Friday Night Lights, A Town, A Team, and A Dream. The chapter on race fascinated the sociology professor and set her on a path she remains on 26 years later. The UTPB professor is determined to preserve the history of the Black community in Odessa. Although Black people began moving to Odessa in the late 30s, largely from East Texas and Louisiana, Hadjikostandi said very little of that history had been documented before she arrived. As much as I looked, there wasn't much in the library about the community other than Friday Night Lights and two or three other publications that were not academic, just other small publications about the community, she said. I felt it would be very beneficial to younger generations to know the history of their ancestors and how the community developed on the South Side. The professor realized soon after her arrival, Odessa was divided by the railroad tracks, with Hispanics and blacks on one side and whites on the other. She began her research by tracking down many of the people mentioned in Bissinger's book and found them willing to share what life was like in the days of segregation. Many of them were leaders. They were teachers, church leaders, entrepreneurs, she said. The list is long, but among those she spoke with were teachers Arlene Campbell, Fred Deaver, and Winfred Richmond. There was also Miltrude Collins, a nurse, and Emma Penny, who ran an informal hotel out of her small home. They became my family. They absolutely became my family. Mrs. Campbell, we called her Granny because she became a person I visited very, very often, she said. They understood the importance and they just embraced me. I was so grateful for that, of course, having come from a different place with two small children. It was the beginning of a long-lasting relationship with the community. She could speak for hours and hours about the stories she's heard over the years about what it was like back then, Hadjika Standy said. Penny moved to Odessa in 1936, spent 27 years as a district representative, she said. Her home became the only place in Odessa where black people could stay while traveling through the area. Her home was a small two-bedroom house, and she told me stories you cannot even believe, she said. She told me that the Harlem Globetrotters in 1975, all 52 of them, came through and stayed with her. In order to be able to accommodate everybody, she kind of recruited some neighbors. Penny also put up national boxing hero Joe Louis, the professor said. Collins, the mother of NAACP President Jean Collins, helped desegregate the hospitals here, Hadjika Sandy said. When I talked to Mrs. Collins, she explained that when she had her baby at the hospital, they told her next step was to go to the basement because that's where they treated all African American and Hispanic people, she said. Mrs. Collins just refused to go to the basement because obviously all the individuals there had all kinds of diseases. She said, "No, I'm not exposing my baby to that basement. Call my husband to take me home right now." From then on, the hospital was desegregated. Richmond spoke of living in the home he built by hand, room by room, Hadjika Standy said. He also built Campbell's house. Mr. Richmond explained that he couldn't get any loans. He had to buy the lumber or anything he needed on a weekly basis and then continue with his work. That was a gradual way to build their homes, she said. The diligence and the integrity of all the individuals I talked to were incredible. She also heard stories about other folks, including Dr. Wheatley Stewart, who was the only doctor who would treat blacks and Hispanics, and Edward Downing Sr., who was a principal at Douglas Elementary and Carver School. An elementary school in Odessa is now named after him. Desegregation occurred in Odessa in 1982, roughly 10 to 15 years later than the rest of the United States, and it wasn't without negative repercussions, Hadjika Standy said. The black community had always been a tight-knit one, and that changed to a certain extent after desegregation, she said. Black teachers no longer were able to provide the support and oversight to the children they'd grown so close to over the years. Here's something that stays in my head. Desegregation does not mean integration, and that I heard from several of the people I interviewed, she said. For years, Hadjika Standy worked on a tri-ethnic committee that was formed after desegregation. Its goal was to monitor how students were treated and the type of education they were getting. She's also been on the boards of the Phyllis Wheatley Day Nursery and Gertrude Bruce Historical Cultural Center. Overall, the stories that originated on the south side of Odessa inspire her, Hadjika Standy said. In fact, she now spends a lot of her time talking to the descendants of those original leaders so she can continue to document their stories as well. She shares her vast collections of stories with her classes in peer-reviewed publications and at various conferences, she said. She's created one documentary so far, and she's determined to share her decades of work on the Internet. Some of the oral histories can be found at https://agradecidation.org. odessaenas.com/videos/. I wish for the younger generation to be aware of the contributions, struggles, diligence, and strength of their ancestors, Hadja Kostandi said. The histories are part of my teaching and part of my showing the resilience of people who have been denied a lot of their rights but kept their integrity and their strength in continuing and creating. The stories are endless. I could tell one story after another, one story after another. Before her classes went online, Hadja Kostandi said she'd often take her students on a tour of the South Side so they could see historic places. They'd often dine at Arthur Ray's, which famously offered home-cooked meals for more than 40 years. The original restaurant, which was a beer joint at first, was built by Arthur Ray Anderson Jr.'s mother, Essie Taylor, by hand. While things have improved for blacks in Odessa and the nation, Hadja Kostandi said we still have a ways to go when it comes to equity in jobs, housing, education, and just opportunities in general. People need to engage in more critical thinking when it comes to things like Black Lives Matter and critical race theory, she said. People should not be leery of groups that have developed throughout this country because of the issues of race and racism. They need to understand and critically think about them. Black Lives Matter has become one of those groups that people are fearful of, Hadja Kostandi said. We're going back to the 60s when people were fearful of the Black Panthers and people didn't know the first thing about the Black Panthers. The Black Panthers were not a violent group. They were a group that helped kids. When people were treated so unequally and with such violence, sometimes you have to react. So what exactly is critical race theory? Critical race theory is looking critically at race relations, to just put it into a short and quick sentence, she said. The people behind critical race theory are not trying to change history. They're trying to explore, understand, and show history in its reality. What went on can't be disregarded to begin with, and what is going on now cannot also be disregarded. As a sociologist, I can say that the concept of race is a social and political construct that taking issue with CRT is at best ignoring the critical analysis of history, Hadja Kostandi said. This theory is embedded in the history of this country, and to remove from the classrooms historical realities that are based on institutional racial discrimination that has occurred in the past and is still occurring is not doing justice to history and truth. Obituaries. Alicia Evans. Odessa, Texas. Alicia Evans was born September 26, 1920, in Karnak, Texas, to the late Henry Lee and Rosie Bell Adkins. It is with great sorrow we announce Alicia, our beloved matriarch, passed away on February 7, 2022, at the age of 101. She is preceded in death by her parents, Henry Lee Adkins, Rosie Bell Adkins, her beloved husband, Cornelius Evans Sr., son, Henry Lee Evans, and two grandchildren. She leaves to cherish her memory three daughters, Ruby Jewel Veal and Billy of Odessa, Texas, Robbie Jean Raymond of Baytown, Texas, Ruby Mae Terry of McCamey, Texas, three sons, Cornelius Evans Jr. and Tanya of Houston, Texas, Robert Evans and Janetta of Midland, Texas, Joe Evans, Sophronia or Sophie of Odessa, Texas, Sister Farrellee Adams of Los Angeles, California, Brother Will Adkins of Conroe, Texas, 24 grandchildren, 45 great-grandchildren, 63 great-great-grandchildren, and one great-great-great-grandchild. Visitation will be on Thursday, February 17th at Avelos, Sanchez, and Thomas Funeral Home from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. Funeral service will take place on Friday, February 18, 2022, at Northside Church of Christ at 10 a.m., with Minister Rodney D. Taylor, Sr. officiating. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens Cemetery. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezetfh.com. Death Notices. Danielle Danny Conrad, Odessa. Danielle Danny Conrad, 46, of Odessa, died Wednesday, February 2nd, 2022, in Odessa. Celebration of Life is scheduled for 3 to 5 p.m. Thursday, February 17, 2022, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Malcolm K. Hensley, Odessa. Malcolm K. Hensley, 85, of Odessa, died Sunday, February 13, 2022, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 3 p.m. February 16, 2022, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Donald Bug is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Josephine Sanchez Rangel, Odessa. Josephine Sanchez Rangel, 78, died Saturday, February 12, 2022, in Odessa, Texas. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Eduardo Granado Rodriguez, Odessa. Eduardo Granado Rodriguez, 76, of Odessa, died February 12, 2022, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Maria Sanchez, Midland. Maria Sanchez, 64, of Midland, died Tuesday, February 15, 2022, in Midland. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. February 22, 2022, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine in Midland. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens Cemetery in Midland. Viewing will be from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday, February 21, 2022, with the rosary being recited at 7 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are by Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, February 12, 2022. Viewpoints. Questions for the candidates. Is it your expectation that Midland County will have to hold a bond election to build a new jail, a law enforcement complex, or have another election to raise the sales tax to raise more revenue for county government? How big must county government get to operate effectively? Would you commit to not holding an election that raises taxes for the next 4 years? Terry Johnson, County Judge Candidate. Voters should get to decide what they want for county. The recent census revealed that Midland has grown dramatically over the last 10 years. The increase in traffic congestion, traffic accidents, and the inability to get the service we were accustomed to in restaurants and more makes this very apparent. The fact is, Midland County grew by 50,000 people between 2010 and 2020. With an increase in population that's substantial, comes a natural increase in crime and criminals. When the 2010 census results were announced, the division of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice that oversees jail standards recommended Midland County have a jail with 500 beds. Prior to the COVID outbreak, the number of inmates housed in the Midland County Jail was near capacity most days. But the last 2 years have changed a lot of things. The pandemic created state restrictions regarding those who remained locked up versus those who let out on bond. The courts were shut down, so only the most violent of the violent were being dealt with and jailed. Today, as we get back to a more normal system of justice, where all jailable offenses are being jailed, the number of prisoners we house is going up. We are hopeful the rising rates of incarceration we are seeing won't exceed our current capacity. I have spent a good part of my current term supporting the Sheriff's Department because the safety of our residents and businesses has been one of my highest priorities. Based on our growth, the new recommendation for a number of beds needed from the TDJ is 750, with possible increase to 1,000 beds. Whether we remodel our current facility, add on to what already exists, or completely start over in a new location is still being determined, One way or another, Midland County will have to add new beds. Like any business, to make the smartest decision possible, we have engaged architects and engineers to lay out every scenario, including cost. As soon as they complete their work, we will make those public. The public will then have an opportunity to decide what they want, need, and how to pay for it. The jail, its size, and our growth are a part of a broader issue that neither my opponent nor some on the commissioner's court seem to understand. Government is the size it is due to the fiscal policies of the commissioner's court. While it's politically expeditious for a candidate to say they'll never raise taxes, the candidates should have the business experience to show you, or at least tell you, how they'll provide services while keeping taxes low. What will they cut? Will they let more prisoners out of jail so they don't have to build a new one? Will they stop building roads? The reason I've been able to keep our tax rate one of the lowest in the state is because, as a fiscal conservative, lifelong Midlander, and business owner, I view county management through that lens. For example, in our recent budget, I voted against across-the-board salary increases of $2.6 million because a merit-based system for making salary adjustments and a market-based system for public safety personnel makes great business sense. The harder you work, the greater your pay should be. This approach would help us keep taxes low and or make a dent in the costs of building additional beds. Moreover, think about this. When a candidate for public office also says they won't let the voters decide when to raise sales taxes and for what priorities, they're saying two things. One, they're saying voters aren't smart enough to make decisions. And two, the candidate is saying they would rather make those decisions themselves, sometimes behind closed doors and often without voter approval. For example, my predecessor, who encouraged my opponent to run, spent over $30 million on the county courthouse without asking the voters. They might do things like that in California, but that's not how we operate in Midland. I prefer to let voters decide what voters want. My opponent prefers the opposite. The contrast couldn't be starker. I'm asking for your vote. Jonas Smoot, County Judge Candidate. Building jail without debt to require planning, vision. I would like to begin this response by saying thank you to our Midland County law enforcement officers and first responders, and also to law enforcement and other first responders everywhere. Growing up in a home that not only respected law enforcement, but which also had a 33-year well-respected police veteran at the helm of my family, allowed me to see, feel, and experience the tiniest bit of what those heroes come up against daily. Midland County's law enforcement officers embody the ideal of servant leadership and commit to their jobs because they are committed to serving others and their community. Having a working environment that is unsuitable or substandard at best is not a challenge anyone wants our law enforcement heroes to experience day in, day out. Not only is the current jail situation unsuitable for employees, it is also a deterrent to recruitment and retention efforts. It is incumbent upon Midland County to support our law enforcement officers and first responders in the best manner possible, so these heroes safely return home each day. Sheriff Kreiner and the entire Midland County Sheriff's Office are exemplary stewards who keep our community safe day in, day out, even when we may not always be aware of the many obstacles they may face in doing so. Having a vision and a plan is key to allow for Midland County's law enforcement officers and first responders to work in the best possible environment. The recently shared Midland County's Law Enforcement Complex Master Plan is being proposed to a tune of just less than $200 million. This $200 million proposal tips at reaching the totality of Midland County's annual budget, and yet does not even include land costs, MRT, January 11. This master plan proposal suggests a new jail in a new location, new justices of the peace offices and courtrooms, constables' offices, and a warrants office building, a new sheriff's office, and a mental health transitional facility. With the levels of revenue generally generated with sales taxes and current property tax rates, building a new jail could be doable without debt. This would require vision and planning, and might require reallocating future budgets away from other projects. As we've recently been told by my opponent in this race, there are a multitude of grants and other avenues with which the county regularly could pursue and utilize to fund some of our greatest needs should that choice be made. Current county sales tax revenues collection has increased by almost 50% year over year. Getting back to the big question at hand of, to tax or not to tax, if Midland County is unable to build the law enforcement complex our constituents direct us to via direct funding and without raising taxes, then Midland County's elected officials should then put the issue to the voters. As a fiscal conservative who is loath to hear of yet another tax increase, it is neither my place nor my intention to ever increase any taxes without a majority of the voters' support and their specific direction to do so. Regarding the size of county government, there is no one size fits all. My background in leadership and continuous improvement makes me unwilling to grow and bloat Midland County's cost to our taxpayers by increasing the size of its government. County government, along with all government, is there to serve its voters and should do so as efficiently as possible. Midland County voters will dictate the size of the government through their voting. My background in leadership, along with my having a vision and a plan for Midland County, will not only pave the way for this law enforcement complex master plan, but also for the many other issues and opportunities we are sure to face together. Our law enforcement community and first responders matter. They deserve our attention, along with our best efforts at ensuring they have the best and most appropriate tools to do their jobs and make it home safely each day. Good leaders must focus on a variety of issues and deliver positive and actionable results that benefit the community as a whole, especially when such an important issue, like best supporting our law enforcement officers, arises. I am Jonna Smoot, and I am sincerely asking for your vote to be your Midland County judge this March 1st or during early voting from Monday, February 14, through Friday, February 25th. Thank you. Robin Donnelly, Precinct 2 candidate. Consider finances before deciding on new facilities. Currently, we are simply studying the current and future needs for law enforcement facilities. If that study and the facts provided require us to take some action, then the issue should go to the voters to assess whether they agree and the need exists for the county to build new facilities or pursue alternatives. The fiscal case would have to be made to the voters. In this study, we are looking at a Justice of the Peace courthouse, the sheriff's office, a mental health diversion center, and the jail. The judges in the juvenile board are looking at a new juvenile probation facility and a juvenile detention facility. The Texas Juvenile Justice Commission will have to approve this after the study is complete. Looking at the overall requests, and as a fiscal conservative, I would not ask for something unless it is an imminent or foreseeable need. Then I would have to be persuaded that the county could handle it financially. We need to take into account the total tax and debt burden and determine if the county can get its duties with the current ad valorem and sales taxes. I do see bond elections coming from the county, the city, the hospital district, and the schools. As a county commissioner, I realize the county is at the mercy of the Texas Jail Standards Commission in Austin, which can dictate how our jail operates and thereby dictate the facility requirements. However, as a property owner, I know voters would be weighing the needs of the county versus the needs of the community at large. My hope is that the study will have recommendations on how we can better utilize existing resources, as opposed to just constructing new facilities. In regard to raising taxes in the future, I am committed to maintaining the no new revenue tax rate that we have maintained so far. It is my belief that the legislature is aiming to further restrict or change the ad valorem property tax in the next session. The size of county government is determined by what services are required or expected by the citizens and voters of the county. We have had a large increase in personnel because the other elected officials have requested additional people to maintain the current level of service or to improve them. I have tried to exercise some restraint on the number of county employees, but have not had the full backing of the court. We have replaced consultants with full-time employees in some instances. In other instances, there are a number of open positions funded in the budget but not filled. Our focus as a county needs to be more about the quality of staff than just the quantity. Jeff Sommers, Precinct 2 candidate. Much-needed jail expansion is now just a matter of when. Let's start to answer these questions with a statement that says I will support our first responders and back their efforts on absolutely any occasion that arises. These folks are the backbone of the county and are the people that keep our county safe and secure. It is critical that we support and make decisions with these departments in mind, while at the same time keeping our critical priorities of county water, roads and bridges, horseshoe transparency, etc., in focus and progressing forward. After my recent tour of the county jail facilities, it's inevitable that future expansion and renovations will be needed. With the current location being basically landlocked, expansion at an alternate location will be required. The question here is the time frame of when the county pulls the trigger on those upgrades. While this issue is on the table, my position is that we get tougher on crime and make darn sure people in our community understand that crimes being committed in other parts of this county will not be tolerated in this county. While not utilizing the incarcerated folks to help tackle our trash issue that is seen on roads throughout the county, why not have them dig the ditches for the new county water lines? Why not get harder on criminals and put them to work to better the community? Why not address the mental health issues that is a core reason for increase in inmates? In the near term, there are other options we can pursue to keep the jail population in line and slow the growth in that facility. Let's be sure we are making those efforts before we decide to build a new facility in the county. Do realize the useful life of the current facility is coming to an end, and a decision will have to be made long term. Understand that I want to keep taxes as low as possible while still providing the county with adequate services to keep the residents of our county safe. A conservative approach is needed to make the correct decisions at the most appropriate times. County water, roads, and first responders are top priorities of mine and will continue to be if I'm elected. The time frame of when these issues are addressed will be critical. Let's keep taxes low and manage our current resources more efficiently as we continue to grow as a county. Make sure to vote for Jeff Sommers starting February 14 through March 1 if you want a conservative commissioner to deliver proven leadership. Diane Anderson, Precinct 4 candidate. Funding decision isn't for me to impose on residents. I was privileged to receive a tour of the jail facilities in early January by Sergeant Chris Evans. he provided an insight into what portions of the facility had been renovated, the portion that was the most recent addition to the jail, and he spoke about the antiquated computerized locking and unlocking of doors system. He provided insight into the processing procedures of criminals, the area they are brought into, where they must shower and dress in their prison clothes, and where they are placed. Very insightful tour. I had an opportunity to ask him about capacity and the need for the proposed new jail. There is a need, and the court has already hired a consultant to provide options. My expectations to hold a bond election or to raise sales taxes are not for me to impose on the residents, unless they say that is what they think is necessary. For that to happen, voters need to be well apprised of the options, needs, and costs. Therefore, my assurance to the voters of Precinct 4 is, I will represent their voice on the court. I will be accessible, transparent, and accountable. I would appreciate your vote for Diane Anderson, Commissioner's Court, Precinct 4. Charles Hall, Precinct 4 candidate. Action on jail needed, but research is still necessary. The county jail is approximately 35 years old. Since opening, the state has changed many of the jail standards. At this time, the jail is under several variances because of the issues that have been found by the jail commission, meaning that there are several issues that cannot be fixed with the current jail situation, and the jail is functioning under waivers. A new or upgraded jail is necessary. We need to explore the feasibility of improving the current jail versus the expenditure of building a new facility. I would like the opportunity to research the best way to do this with consideration of the budget, working closely with the court, sheriff, and others to research the best way to fund this much-needed project. That being said, there is not enough space at the current location to expand the jail, and any monies spent to improve would not add any extra beds to the facility, which is already functioning near capacity. There needs to be discussion held to decide what is the best way to handle the issue. My feeling is this will need to be a bond election to fully fund a new jail. This is ultimately the taxpayer's decision, but at this time, that would be my recommendation. Our county government seems to be operating efficiently, although there is always room for improvement. I would like to review each department individually, looking at their purpose, mission, assuring they are functioning effectively prior to growing the budget or adding staffing. In prior years, money has been given to other taxing entities that could have been used to fund county needs, such as roads, equipment, and water. This expenditure needs to be closely reviewed and discussed. My intent is to keep taxes where they are now, but I would need to have the ability to delve deeply into the budget to research where there is funding available to move around, ensuring that all departments are appropriately budgeted. Randy Prude, Precinct 4 Commissioner. Alleviate need for larger jail by focusing on mental health. I have always opposed the financing of government services with property taxes, just as I do concerning income taxes. Both are unfair in my opinion, because I believe everyone should help pay for the benefits we have in this county and nation. In order to put my beliefs into action, I have lobbied state elected officials, especially Tom Craddock, who is in agreement, to replace property taxes with user fees and our sales tax on a statewide basis. Locally, I have led our court into lowering Midland's tax rate to the lowest in the state using our sales taxes. I also believe that Midland County residents should be able to own their homes upon paying off their mortgages and reaching retirement, so I led our court into raising the homestead exemption to $100,000 and freezing county taxes forever on those 65-plus homesteads. Concerning the new jail and law buildings, I am opposed to using debt based on property taxes, and I believe we can forestall any debt for several more years by helping Tom Craddock and numerous other Midland foundations and stakeholders and the hospital district to complete the mental health facility between Midland and Odessa first. It is said that as many as one-third to half of our recurring jail population should be in rehab rather than jail. I look forward to returning those men and women to their families and useful citizenship, thus alleviating the need for a larger jail for several years. No matter how I feel, though, the voters will have the ultimate say before we incur any debt. I'm opposed to debt both countywide and personally. County District Judge Elections. Christopher Deanda, District Judge Candidate. Conservatism, Ethics, Part of Judge Candidate's Resume. I am married to a beautiful woman with four kids and four grandchildren. I am a man of God that is a true conservative and ethical. I was in the Navy and worked in cryptology and intelligence with a top secret clearance. I was born and raised in West Texas. I went to Texas Tech for my undergraduate and law school. The only time that I have left this area was to serve my country in the Navy. My family has been in Texas since the 1800s. I worked for the Midland District Attorney's Office as a prosecutor. After leaving the DA's office, I went into a general private practice. I have worked in criminal defense, divorce and child custody, and civil litigation with construction and oil and gas clients. I have tried more than 50 jury trials as well as hundreds of bench trials. I go to work every day with the drive and work ethic to take on the task of District Judge of the 238th. When I worked as a prosecutor in the 238th District Court, I was pivotal in reducing the backlog in cases in that court. I continue to reduce the backlog of cases in my work as a criminal defense attorney. My opponent likes to use out-of-county visiting judges to stand in for her. This costs our county extra money instead of using the other current sitting judges to help her out. It is not fair that taxpayers are funding this behavior. Let's keep that money here in Midland instead of giving it to outsiders. Elected officials need to remember that they work for the people and that it is not about themselves. I am not a politician that is here to raise lots of money from people only to be frivolous about spending that money. If I'm elected by the people, then I have a duty to the people of my community, which is Midland, Texas. Also, my opponent was involved in approving payments of at least $28,000 to a former assistant district attorney for legal work he performed as a judicial advisor while still working for the district attorney's office as a prosecutor. That same prosecutor no longer has his license because of these payments from judges like my opponent. Those invoices are dated from 2012 to 2018 that were approved by my opponent. However, my opponent is still sitting on the bench after she was involved in this behavior. She needs to either be voted off the bench or graciously step down from the bench. In addition, my opponent has had a complaint for judicial misconduct. The Lord has given me the strength to run in this race and blessed me in my life. I'm a God-fearing man that knows that the Lord has a plan for me. God has given me the courage to run for office against an opponent that will do what it takes to win this election. God will continue to give me the strength to stay the course in His plan. What will I promise you if elected? Two fundamental promises. I will decide cases fairly and impartially, free of political influence or intimidation. And, regardless of my own personal view, I will follow the law. This includes the laws and constitutions of the United States and the great state of Texas. When voting this election year, remember, I am the only candidate in this race that has spent their whole life and career in the great state of Texas. I didn't move here from Missouri like my opponent. Help me bring honor and commitment back to the bench here in our great county. Thank you, and may God bless each in every one of you. Elizabeth Leonard, District Judge Candidate. Qualifications important to fulfill duties as judge. Beginning on February 14, 2022, Midland County voters will begin casting votes for many state and local races, including judge of the 238th District Court. As you make your decision, ask yourself, who is the best qualified candidate for the job? First, let me give you an overview of what the job entails. The 238th District Court is one of four general jurisdiction courts in Midland. As judge of this court, I hear felony criminal cases and civil cases. We are fortunate to have a fifth district court, the 318th Family District Court, that handles family law cases. The criminal cases range from possession of less than a gram of a controlled substance to capital murder. The vast majority of criminal cases result in a negotiated plea agreement. However, about 30 cases a year get tried to a jury in the 238th District Court. In addition to a busy plea docket and trial docket, I hear revocation of probation trials, bench trials, bond hearings, pretrial motions, status conferences, competency hearings, and pretrial conference hearings. The civil docket has become much busier post-COVID. While the civil cases do not go to trial as often as the criminal cases, there are numerous motions to hear and rule on. Some motions, specifically motions for summary judgment, would end the case without a trial or settlement. The above are some of the responsibilities of a district judge. Now I want to present my qualifications to serve as district judge. I have served as the judge of the 238th District Court for 9.5 years. I know how to manage a docket because I have done so. Even after nearly 2 years of COVID restrictions, the 238th District Court does not have a backlog of cases awaiting trial. I have tried more than 275 jury trials, more than 100 as a first chair prosecutor, and more than 175 as a presiding judge. Post-conviction, a criminal defendant may choose to appeal his conviction. None of the trials I've presided over, civil or criminal, have been reversed on appeal. That means the Court of Appeals has determined I did not make an error and that both parties received a fair trial. Recently, I heard my opponent criticize me for payments made to a former prosecutor for work done on post-conviction writs of habeas corpus. This payment arrangement, dating back to 2001, was put into place by Judge John Hyde, a pillar of the community and a beloved judge who taught ethics at statewide judicial conferences. Judge Hyde sought and received approval of this arrangement by the county attorney and also by the commissioner's court in an open meeting. My opponent also criticized my use of visiting judges over the past 2 years. The budget reflects the actual amount spent was $1,753, less than half of the $4,000 budgeted amount. Prior to Governor Perry appointing me to the bench in 2012, I worked as a landman and oil and gas attorney for 7 years. I am the only candidate with oil and gas experience. I also worked as a prosecutor for nearly 11 years. During my years as a prosecutor, I was selected by the National Advocacy Center in Columbia, South Carolina, to train young prosecutors. In 2013, I assembled a group of stakeholders from the criminal justice system and the mental health system and started a mental health court. This court works with individuals suffering from major depressive disorder, schizophrenia, and bipolar disorder. We work together as a team to support these individuals and direct them to a path of wellness. In 2016, I advocated for mental health services in our jail, and our commissioner's court generously funded a mental health caseworker and part-time psychiatrist for the jail. In 2019, Midland was one of four counties in Texas selected for a pilot program for jail-based restoration of competency. This program funds a mental health worker who works with inmates to restore their competency to stand trial while in our jail, thus avoiding a very costly state hospital stay. To date, the program has saved taxpayers over $1.5 million. In 2020, the justices of the Texas Supreme Court and the judges of the Court of Criminal Appeals selected me to serve as a commissioner on the Texas Judicial Commission on Mental Health. This statewide commission trains mental health and criminal justice professionals on new programs and ideas for identifying and treating the mentally ill who find themselves in the criminal justice system. In addition to my legal work, I have served my community as a board member of the Midland Behavioral Health Leadership Team, Spectrum of Solutions, formerly MARC, Junior League of Midland, and Midland County Republican Women. I am also a member of Executive Women, PEO, Downtown Lions Club, Midland County Bar Association, and a lifetime fellow of the Texas Bar Foundation. My husband, Dan, and I are members of Christ Church Anglican. Between us, we have 3 children and 7 grandchildren. Cassandra Cheek, County Court at Law Candidate. Career gives Cheek broad expertise in judicial system. The most important thing voters need to know about the Midland County Court at Law is that it is our designated juvenile court, and the judge is also the chairperson of the juvenile board. Specifically, this court handles the cases of young people between the ages of 10 and 17 who are accused of committing a crime. I've spent most of my career working with young people in the justice system, and it is incredibly challenging work. You have to be compassionate while making sure they face the consequences for their actions. The hope is that these kids will turn their lives around, but that doesn't happen by accident. If we do not handle these cases correctly, we will lose these young people to the adult criminal system, which is a losing proposition for all of us. I am board certified in juvenile law. In fact, I'm the only attorney in the Permian Basin to hold that certification and one of only 70 in the entire state. To become board certified, an attorney must have substantial experience, pass a rigorous exam, and be recommended by colleagues. I have also been recognized as an expert and asked to speak by several organizations, including the Texas District and County Attorneys Association, the Texas Association of Counties, and the West Texas Juvenile Chiefs Association. I particularly enjoy speaking locally to groups of young people and their parents to explain the juvenile and adult systems. I spent my childhood on military bases. My father was a career Air Force JAG officer. We were stationed all over the country, as well as overseas. I received both my Bachelor of Arts and Doctor of Jurisprudence from the University of Texas at Austin. After I finished school, I moved out to West Texas in 1997, where I have built a legal career and raised my family. I spent 22 years in both Midland and Andrews counties as a prosecutor, handling every type of case from Class C misdemeanors to capital murder. During that time, I also gained experience in probate, guardianship, family, and civil matters. In 2020, I retired from the county and began working for Navarrete and Schwartz. Having experience as both a defense attorney and a prosecutor has provided me with a broad understanding of the judicial system. I am a former director for the Texas Young Lawyers Association, and I am a current member of the Midland County Bar Association and the Juvenile Advisory Council. I am also a Texas Bar Fellow. My husband, Edward Cheek, is the financial advisor for Wells Fargo. We met here in West Texas and have been married for 22 years. We have 2 children, Chris, a junior at the University of Texas at Austin, and Abby, a freshman at LIU Brooklyn. Ed and I are enjoying being new empty nesters, and this is an ideal time for me to take on this new challenge. I have served on several boards, including Safe Place of the Permian Basin, CASA Advisory, Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center, formerly Midland Need to Read, and Midland Symphony Bells. In addition, I have volunteered with 311 Ministries, Midland Rape Crisis and Children's Advocacy Center, the Museum of the Southwest, my home church, and each of my children's schools. I'm also active in the various theater organizations in Midland, both on and off the stage. I'm currently the president of the Midland Classic Theater Company Board, which is an organization dedicated to providing free productions to the public. In addition, I'm a member of the Midland County Republican Women and Midland Inspires. My family and I are members of First United Methodist Church. I believe that my career has prepared me for this moment. I am ready to hold court for the taxpayers and the children of Midland County on day one. I have the time, experience, and passion to serve. That's why I am humbly asking for the vote and support of your readers to be the next presiding judge of our Midland County Court at Law. Mark Henry Detman, County Court at Law candidate. Trial appellate experience preps Detman for position. I'm Mark Henry Detman, and I'm running for judge of the County Court at Law. The legislature has assigned to the two Midland County Courts at Law misdemeanor cases where jail time can be assessed. Family law cases such as divorces, adoptions, and juvenile matters, probate cases including will contests, guardianships, and mental commitments, and civil suits seeking $500,000 or less. In my 4 decades of legal practice in Midland County, I've acquired extensive experience in these types of cases. As the former Midland County attorney, I prosecuted thousands of criminal cases and tried hundreds of juvenile prosecutions. I also tried a variety of civil suits. While in private practice, I've handled cases in criminal and family law, probate and juvenile matters, guardianships, mental commitments, and various civil suits. I've tried more than 200 jury trials and handled in excess of 100 criminal and civil appeals. The duties of the judge of the County Court at Law include conducting bench trials and presiding over jury trials. I have extensive knowledge of courtroom procedure through my trial work, and my appellate work has given me valuable knowledge of errors that can be raised on appeal and can result in costly retrials at taxpayers' expense. For these reasons, I believe my extensive trial and appellate experience is well suited to the position of judge of the County Court at Law. During my years in Midland, I've also had the opportunity to serve our citizens in various capacities. I've served with a variety of our community organizations over the years, and I currently serve on the board of directors of the Midland YMCA and Midland Crime Stoppers. I also have the privilege of serving as chaplain to law enforcement and the first responders of the Midland Police Department, Midland Sheriff's Office, and Midland Fire Department. My life's priorities are my faith in Jesus Christ and my family. I am married to Lakita Detman. We adopted 2 sons who are now 6 and 8 years old. I pledge to continue to be a faithful servant of our Constitution and our community, and I would be honored to serve the citizens of Midland County as judge of the County Court at Law. Aaron Kinsey, State Board of Education candidate. We need to put focus back on kids and get parents involved. Since 2018, I've lived in West Texas and am proud to call it home. I've lived a life full of diverse experiences in multiple regions of the U.S. All these experiences have led me to believe deeply in my conservative principles and, more importantly, that we live in the best country on earth. I grew up in East Texas and graduated from Canton High School. My dad was a small businessman with no formal education, but he wanted his kids to go to college. I attended Texas A&M University, graduating at the top of my class with a bachelor's and master's degrees. While I was at A&M, 9/11 happened, changing my life forever. I commissioned into the Air Force, serving 9 years. I started my career at Abilene's Dyess Air Force Base and went on to fly C-130s. I deployed twice, flying 120 combat missions in Iraq and Afghanistan. I wrapped up my military career teaching pilot training and the instructor course. Living in 8 places during those 9 years reaffirmed what I've always believed. America is worth fighting for. I then attended Harvard Business School, surviving a left-wing lobotomy attempt and graduating with an MBA. My wife, Caitlin, and I wanted to return to Texas as quickly as possible. We moved to San Antonio, where I managed a $450 million commercial real estate company at the age of 35. I was an intern 3 times in my 30s, a lesson that in today's America, hard work still pays off. In 2018, we moved to Midland, chasing an opportunity to lead a company we had ownership in. We've made West Texas our home and are in love with the people and their unmatched resiliency. The sunsets are also without comparison. Over the past 3 months, I've been continually asked, "Why are you running for State Board of Education, SBOE?" The answer is simple. I have 3 kids nearing school age. I'm concerned for their generation. I want them to have a love for our great country and the exceptional opportunities it provides. Right now, I don't like the values being taught in our schools or the outcomes. The things taught in schools are not the things past generations were taught. They aren't aligned with traditional, conservative West Texas values. The left wants to influence the moldable minds of our kids. They want our kids to focus on the times we've come up short, rather than the fact that the U.S. is a force of good. After my military missions, I have a new mission: defeating the liberal activists pushing critical race theory in our schools and returning control to parents. The left wants to pull us away from teaching kids to love themselves as God made them and to love their families, communities, state, and nation. But if you choose to set aside the differences in values being taught, you can't ignore academic results. Texas is in the bottom quartile of SAT scores and graduation rates. 60% of fourth graders can't read or write at grade level. Statistically, 95% of them won't catch up. The pandemic has only made the situation worse. We have excellent teachers who work hard every day to teach and build up our kids, but we have lost focus. We need to return the focus to kids, the most important stakeholder in this ecosystem. Also, parents, as the protectors and providers for their children, should be extensively involved in their children's education. It is time for parents to reassert this right and stand up for our kids. In my State Board of Education race, my opponent is a first-time office holder. He ran unopposed in the 2020 Republican primary. In 2021, he voted to approve a school whose learning model is based around Ibram X. Kendi's race-centered worldview. On the same day, he vetoed a school whose classical curriculum was backed up by the highly respected conservative Hillsdale College. He claims parents have the right to choose, but only options he deems are good. It's difficult to understand how his judgment can be trusted based on his aforementioned voting decisions. Regardless, do parents want to be told that 15 people on the SBOE can be solely trusted to determine good and bad options? Sounds a lot like the centralized planning of a communist regime. Every parent I've talked to over the past 3 months knows our current education system is failing our kids. It's time to send a fresh perspective to Austin to advocate on behalf of kids and parents, not the system. I'm proud to be endorsed by Texas Right to Life, Oil and Gas Workers Association, Bienvenido in Action, State Senator Charles Perry, Mayor Javier Hoven, Odessa, and Mayor Patrick Payton, Midland. I'm Aaron Kinsey, and I'm standing with parents to fight for kids. On Election Day, remember Kinsey for Kids.
Lactose Intolerance Surgery by Dr. Keith Roach. Dear Dr. Roach, I became lactose intolerant after back surgery last summer. The recovery was difficult only because my appetite was gone for over 2 weeks. Trying to regain some weight, I did smoothies, but I had an unpleasant digestive reaction. I am on lactose-free everything, but wish I could go back to using even small amounts of lactose-containing foods. What happened? Will I be able to go back to having anything with milk in it? I am 76. Signed, C.L. Answer. Intolerance to lactose-containing foods, mostly milk and cheese, is increasingly common as we age. Still, it is unusual to see sudden onset of symptoms in a person in their 70s, and I suspect it was due to the challenge to your gut of having increased amounts of lactose in your smoothies. There are many foods available in a lactose-free version. You can try taking a lactase enzyme supplement prior to having regular lactose-containing foods. My experience is that they work pretty well for some people and not at all well for others, and that too much lactose will always overcome the benefits of the enzyme.
This is the Dear Abby column. Husband of 3 decades still supports first wife. Dear Abby, I have been with my husband for more than 30 years. We have no kids together, but he has 3 adult children from a previous marriage. All of them are in their 30s. He and his ex had a bad breakup, and she has never given up on him coming back to her. In my opinion, he has strung her along. He buys her the moon and pretends our marriage doesn't exist for the, quote, sake of seeing the kids, unquote. We used to be close, but since the pandemic, I have learned he has been going to their house every day before he goes to work. He pays her mortgage and does everything there for her. I pay our house bills because he needs to, quote, support her and the kids, unquote. They have grown super close now and recently had a grandchild. He is too involved with her. He takes her everywhere she wants, and when I get upset or angry, he tells me I'm a selfish, childless B-word. And if I had kids, I would understand. I love him, but I have reached the point where I have no self-esteem. I have asked him more than once why he doesn't go back to her. He tells me I am insecure and paranoid. Abby, I am a smart, successful woman, but I am afraid to give up what we had. I am also afraid of being alone. Am I overreacting about his closeness with her? What do I do? Signed, Beaten Down and Fed Up. Dear Beaten Down, the man you married is emotionally abusive, selfish, and dishonest. I don't know how long this scenario has been playing out, but it's as though he never really divorced his first wife. Has he been visiting the kids all this time, or did it start when the COVID quarantines began? Start now to rebuild your sense of self-esteem by talking with a licensed mental health professional. Once you are stronger, you will be in a better position to decide what you want to do. If you reread your letter, you will notice a glaring omission. Not once did you mention anything positive he does for you. There are worse things than being alone, and what you have described is close to it. Dear Abby, our 14-year-old granddaughter came out as a boy 4 months ago. The situation has been terrifying because he had thought about suicide. He was hospitalized and now sees a therapist and psychologist and is taking anxiety meds. This has been a trying time for us as well. I love my grandchild, but I'm having a very hard time with this. So is my husband. I don't know how to tell my sisters and their husbands about this. One set is pretty understanding, the other set is extremely right-wing and over-the-top conservative. We want to accept our grandchild as who he is identifying as, but we are bewildered. Thank you for any suggestions you might have for us. Signed, Throne in Texas. Dear Throne, I don't think you should rush to share this news with your sisters and their husbands. The announcement should come from your grandchild when he is ready. As to how you and your husband should handle it, the organization PFLAG has recently come out with a free publication titled Supporting Your LGBTQ+ Grandchild. It's a quick and easy read, and you may find the information it contains helpful. Find it at pflag.org or by calling 202-467-8180. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.